Joseph Pearl, Reel 4.
All you have to do is to take off your shirt and shake it, and they have the license to fall out themselves. Well, one particular deal out, and it was pouring rain. They started the deal out at 6 o'clock at night before the meal. And we stood naked. It was raining all night, and all night, and all day. Why? Because the lights, the shirt was wet, and the lights were sticking to the shirt, and you couldn't check them out. So there were all these things that I tell you, I can't go into detail because it's, the mind will boggle the mind, you'll go mad. You go mad. And that happened to that didn't happen in Auschwitz because there wasn't in time in Auschwitz to live long enough to have lice. And but in Dachau and then Bergen-Belsen. Then again, Bergen-Belsen was a camp, also different sections. There was one huge section. It was divided, you couldn't see what goes on in the other section. But I used to have one place that's called the Stern section. Stern section, it used to be where they used to keep American prisoners of war and Jews, American Jews. They used to keep people from Holland because they kept them at a better standard in case for exchange of prisoners, you know what I mean? So it was a different setup, and not only this. In that camp, the Jews had services. Yeah, they used to have prayers. They allowed them to have prayers. So you see, it was a different kind of. What they call they kept ransom, people for ransom. And again, I ended up of working in the kitchen. Working in the kitchen. But the thing that went on there is to... What I could understand is the stench of the rotten bodies. Miles before you, when we were taken to work in Belgium, it was in the middle of the forest, a huge area. The stench, and yet the SS, the sophisticated people, were living, were smelling the same thing. How didn't spew out their guts, I don't know. To cut a long story short, they used to send in their boys, their sons, the Hitlerjugend, the guns, to kill, for the sake of killing. Because you had nobody to answer to. They could do what they liked. What they liked. If one of the Hitlerjugend said to me, "Lick my shoes clean," you have to lick his shoes clean. And then you lick it clean, he shot you dead. This was there. And the father used to be proud, not my son. He knows how to use a gun. Well, I'll move on because I can repeat the same thing all over again.
Yes. You would have been in Belsen, wouldn't you, before this would have been in the middle of the war, am I right?
Oh yes, Belsen, I was about 43.
43,
four,
yes.
And got to 44, it's later stages.
Before the really deteriorated situation at the end.
But things were going from bad to worse. But in this Sternlager was still kept up as a showpiece. It was in what do you call it now? The Red Cross went to visit. What's it a camp called now?
Oh, yes, treason. Treason, yes, that's right.
Show piece. Mm. You know what I mean? Anyway, from there, I was taken to Gross Rosen, where I was a short time there. And in Gross Rosen, it was, we were living in tents. And we didn't have beds. We were sitting on the floor, and one person sat between your legs, and another person sat between his legs, and we were sort of sitting up. And in the morning, they used to take us out to do exercises, and they didn't know what to do with us. And that camp used to replenish other camps, you know? Replenish other camps. And from there I was taken to a place called Balkenheim, where I think it was A.G. Farben had a factory there. And revamping planes, making bombs, light engineering, and so forth. And we were taken there. Then I was taken into we were taken to Balkenheim, and we were called by name out on a list. And then I decided to put numbers on our arms. The same number on the arms as it was on your tunic. And I thought to myself, we were in a big field. It was corn, and corn on the cob, high stuff. We knew that we were going to march out again. I thought to myself, I'm not going out again. Because it was new toilets, new everything was, you know, showers, and wash troughs. So four of our boys decided that we will hide ourselves in the manhole. So they picked up the manhole, and two boys went in one, and another two boys went into the other one. And we said, whoever will march through here, we will make a noise and then we'll take us out. We really didn't know where they were going, but it was an opportunity to try and escape. You know what I mean? After 4 days, they came back. The same people came back with numbers on there. And we couldn't open up the manhole because we were not strong enough. It was heavy cement. So we had to wait somebody to lift us up, to lift up the thing. Then they came back, we made a noise, and they remember, and they came and they lifted up the manhole, and out we climbed. 3/4 dead. We had no strength in our legs. But our legs were divided like this, and this is, we were stiff. And in the evenings, when we were counted, they called out the numbers. And of course, as you can see, I've got no numbers. So all the numbers went to that, and he asked for, was standing there like a sack of potatoes. And I said to him, why aren't you tattooed? I said, well, we were not cold, and we were shot on the side, and this. And they started beating us. You don't exist, why should you be alive? And they beat us and beat us and beat us for about a week. We were. And I always felt that all the beatings, the that God is next to me. I felt God was touching me, urging me on. Keep going, John, keep going. Well, I kept going. And I kept on saying, how can I be alive and then will be alive? If all or nothing. We all survive, all four of us.
You were saying there were good facilities in this camp, is that right?
Toilets, shower. It was specifically built for A.G. Farben to work in his factory. We had, again, half a pound of bread cut up between four people. We had tea in the morning and soup in the evening. So we they had to keep us alive to work in the factory.
And were you working in the factory, Joe?
Yes.
Yes, what were you doing?
Not only working, I was actually made a big shot. I was getting my little... What happened, I tell you, I'll lead you up to it. So you see how I became a big shot. After we got ourselves stronger, we had to go to work. So the whole camp, certain people stayed behind to do the cooking and the potatoes and blah, blah, blah. But the corps that went to work, we four always marched in the front because I didn't trust us anymore. So we four always were marched in the front. Well, the first day we went into the factory, they took the youngsters, including myself, were about 30 youngsters, and we were shoved in a glass room, which was bigger than this, all made of glass, bigger than this. And there were all kinds of things, bicycles, trumpets, violins, motorbikes, laying all over the place. And we were pushing that. Didn't tell us what to do or what not to do. No, just sit and sit and sit. I'm not a person here. At my age, I like to sit there. But at that time, you know, you got to do something. So I started fiddling about with a bicycle. I had a bicycle at home, and I used to take it apart and put it together. So I started, because the bicycle was lying about, and they didn't have ball bearings, so you had to find ball bearings and this. So I'm saying, I said to the farmer, you look for the ball bearings, and you look for that and that, and you look for the pedals, and you look for the wheel. And I started building this bike, but I took a few people to help me. And we were watched by the commandant of this factory. And after about 4 days, the commandant came over to me and he said to me, come here. And I said, yes. He said, what's your number here? I said, I haven't got a number now. I said, what's your number here? So you know, he said, well, look, he said, this man will take your arm on light engineering, these machines, take notice of what he said. Learn. He took me to one machine and another machine. This was drilled, this was drilled going this way, this was drilled going that way. And then here you had the measurements of how far and how deep and so forth and so forth and so forth. He took me around about 30 machines. And then he said, you go back into that room with the others and tell them what you did. The following day, he showed me again the same machine, the same kind of measuring, you know, checking, you know, this. And he says, to me, are you getting all this? I said, yes, yes, I'm getting all this. And then he said, again, go back and tell him exactly how you got to do it, and I told him exactly. On the third day, he said, now you tell me what I told you tonight. Some I remembered all of them, some I didn't remember. But I gripped the gesture, I gripped exactly what he was trying to tell me. And what happened after that? All those kids was under me, I was in charge of them. I had a little band, and I used to make sure that everybody does their job properly, and everything, and I had to check every one of their work, including mine. I also had to work. I wasn't just a person to be in charge. I had my own work to do. But I say to me, if you are not sure, don't hesitate, come and ask me. And if not, they say, I'm not sure, I'm going to ask the other one. And the person who taught me, his name was also Joe, but he was a Belgian, a Christian, Belgian. But I think his grandfather was Jewish. So he was a prisoner of war, the same as me, really. But he wasn't in a camp, but he was outside the camp. He was working in a different kind of situation.
Yes, a sort of slave labor.
Slave labor. And in the meantime, we were talking to him and then discussing. The side of his mouth, he said to him, has he a father and mother? You know, have you got this? And have you got any brothers and sisters? Any brothers and sisters? Because if they catch you talking, I'm sure they must have microphones, you know. But in the conversation, we were, and I said, all my relatives are dead. So there was no point of carrying on. And because I did so much good work, I used to get a piece of paper that I could get, go and have another bowl of soup. But you see, in the camps, in the concentration camps, you couldn't make friends. You couldn't get attached to somebody. Because the following day, they're gone, they're dead. So you couldn't. You were on your own. You had to think on your own. And you had to guide your instinct on your own. But if you can help somebody, you help. And to me, I looked up on myself that I will survive. I will survive. Come what may, God is with me. I will survive. And what's more, I tested God. I know it's a cocky way of talking. I tested God. I did things that really I should have been dead. I did think I should be dead. I rescued people really truthfully. None of my business. Anyway.
Yes, I was wondering, you know, with all the suffering and the brutality that you have described so well, Joe, yes. You still had faith in God.
Oh,
is that right? Yes. Did your faith never waver?
Because, my dear, you've got to have a straw to hold on to. There was nobody else to hold on to. Because all your acquaintances and all your friends which you could make, they were not there the following day. But God was there all the time. I called up and I said to him, see me through this day. You know? Or let me come through the night. Because winter, it was freezing cold. People used to wake up stiff in the morning, frozen to death. And I used to say, get me through this night. You know? So God was really, he was in my thought all the time. And he was protecting me. I felt he was protecting me. I can't emphasize this. And till one day in this particular factory, I felt myself so confident with the commandant. He was also a psychopath. He used to go down where the people used to work on machines, various machines, not the my section, but on the other section, with a huge factory. And if you used to find somebody, not a job, because he used to work from 6 in the morning to 6 at night, with one meal. So it's for weakness, he used to shoot him in the head, chuck him off, put somebody in his place. So he also used to kill about 50 people a day. But I felt so confident from him that I thought to myself, I'm going to test God. This is what I mean when I say I'm going to test God. What happened was, one particular day, he put his arm around me, he says to me, "You children have done a good job this week." This was on a Friday. And I said, "Commandant, I've got a favor to ask you. Who would have the audacity to do a thing like that?" He said, "What is it?" I said, "You know, my children and me are working very, very efficiently and very hard. Do you think I could have the leftovers from the SS to give to my children?" He said, "Yeah, well, we're only, you know, why not?" "This would be certain death. How dare you? How dare you eating the food that we eat?" Every time, every dinner, I used to go, I used to take four people, I used to empty one from one barrel to another, and I used to bring in a half a barrel. I used to share it around for the kids. But eat in your time, not in the liquor, because you have 10 minutes. 10 minutes are bold. You never used to chew it, shove it in. Anyway, so you see, I did something which I should, you know, it was out of the ordinary. And then one day, every camp had happened now. They had violence, we knew how the war was going. All rumors. Supposedly rumors. But every camp had underground. Every camp.
All these you've been in, all these.
Even Auschwitz. They used to go to the officers and say, to know who got killed and how many people got killed and everything. One day in this particular factory, and I was also dealing with explosives, and we had to give an account how much you used, how much you pulled back. I had a big, you know, like a hole, and the explosives that I didn't use, I had to brush them back to that hole, which was weighed and given an account for. Sometimes there was a mistake, there was a spark, and it burned, but you had to give an account. One day, a person comes up to me and he says, "Joe," he says, "I'm telling you now, I'm from the underground. And we have, there is orders passed down that you got to blow up your section." I said to him, "You must be mad." I said, "All my kids would be killed." He said, "Joe, the only thing I can tell you now, and don't answer me back, you are dead if you don't blow it up, and you are dead if you blow it up, because this is the orders. You already know too much, you can't let you live. So make up your mind." He said, "What you do with the kid?" He says, "The time that you're going to explode this, tell them to go to the toilet. All of them. And you'll be the last one to leave." Well, I thought, and we all thought, that this hole goes direct down to the bottom, where a lot of Germans and SS used to work in there. But these walls was there was I think four sections, and they were so thick that in the middle of it it divided like this. So when I threw my hand grenade in, it stopped here and tore it, but it didn't go right down. So you can imagine the machine gun let loose. In order to save people, I lifted up my hand and I said, "Stop, I did it. I did it." And then when the commandant saw that I lifted up my hand, they ordered him to stop. And he came over to me and he said to me, "I don't believe you." I said to him, "I'll tell you exactly how I done it." He said, "But there was no reason for you to do it." He said, "You had to do it. You had bread and you had food, and why did you do it?" I said, and my mind came, what damage the thing that I'm doing is doing to all the civilians. You know, I didn't want to be a part of it. He said, "I don't believe you. Who told you to do it? Who ordered you to do it?" I said, "Nobody." I said, "This is all came to my head." And I can't describe the punishment that I went through. I went through beating and burning, hot needles under my nails, all the things. And what I found myself, I've made up my mind that instead of crying, I start laughing. The more horrible they were to me, the louder I laughed. Why? Because I want them to think that I'm mad, and there is nothing to beat around. And they took me from Balkenheim, this was in Balkenheim, back to Gross Rosen, where they're going to hang me in front of all those people who were in that camp to make an example. And they put me in a little place where you couldn't sit and you couldn't stand. And in the morning, I was supposed to be hung. And while I was there, I must have fallen asleep, and I saw my mother. And although I saw my mother being shot, subconsciously I knew she was dead. And my mother was a 6-footer, 18-stone woman. I was dumbfounded. She said, "Joe, don't say a word." Look down on the floor. You will find a piece of paper. Lick the piece of paper and put it against the glass. There was a hole there. And the glass will come away. And do exactly as I tell you. First of all, where the hell did this piece of paper come from? And I did what she did. She told me exactly how to escape. She said, "If you go down on the left, you will find all the electric wire." She said, "You roll down and you roll out of the other side. Go into the forest and you'll escape." And it was winter. And somehow all the area which was open was, it had no snow, but in the forest there was still snow. Anyway, I went in deep into the forest and I found a dead horse. A dead horse. And I was so hungry and so weak, but I had no strength to my fingers, and I started to crawl with my fingers over the horse, and the flesh came away. And before I started eating it, there was an assess, says, "Halt," because I still had the stripe And as he said, help, I threw my sack backwards and I rolled down the hill.